up and play football.
You get where you feel like you can rush the quarterback. You understand? Rush the quarterback.
Trib Live Radio presents the Mark Cavalli Show. Every Monday, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. with your fresh Steelers reaction.
Not let that damn quarterback out of there.
The Steel Mill is live right now on Trib Live Radio. Here's your host, Mark Cavalli.
I like it.
It's always a more fun version of the Cavalli Show when the Steelers are on Monday Night Football because, of course, it's the perfect lead into Monday Night Football. But here's the downside. When the Steelers are on the road for Monday Night Football, that means Mark Cavalli is on the road for Monday Night Football. But in this case, it's probably good news for Cavalli because he's in San Diego, and even in mid-October, the weather is still 90 degrees or above in San Diego, and that's where Mark Cavalli is at this moment on the Mark Cavalli Show. So we will go to him right now, live in San Diego. Mark Cavalli, how goes it?
Pretty good. Sitting here at the old gas lamp district area Marriott in the pool. Relaxing a little bit after yesterday's travel days. I think we all deserve this. A couple delays, put it this way, Josh. I left my house at 11:30 a.m. and I walked in the hotel room here in San Diego about 10:30 p.m.
Ooh, that's a long day.
It was a long day, but a little overcast. Let me set the scene for y'all. Some record highs here in San Diego over the past couple of days in the mid-90s, upper 90s. Today it was supposed to be as hot, but I see a lot and lot of clouds. Very similar to the Pittsburgh type of weather here right now. You don't see the sun at all, so maybe it's not going to be as hot as I sit here with my feet in the pool outside. So that's about it. I don't think temperature. Another thing is it gets dark early here. They don't believe in, I guess, daylight savings time.
Ah.
So while it gets dark in Pittsburgh at 7:30, it's getting dark here at 6:30. So even though the game starts at 5:30 local time, it will be dark within an hour of it. So the weather shouldn't be a factor.
Very interesting. I would have never known that about San Diego. You learn something new every day. Now, here's my question. You set the scene being outside by the pool area. How close are you to Chris Adamski right now?
Probably about 30 yards. Not quite sure what the buzzsaw is doing after a hefty breakfast he ate. One thing buzzsaw likes to do is eat and eat for free. So when you have the complimentary breakfast at the residence in downtown San Diego, he is kind of destroyed this morning, and now he's out here. You know, he told me he's chatting online right now. I'm asking him, like, is this the 90s? Are you, like, in the Steelers chat room where, you know, I might be dating myself, and you might not know what I'm talking about, but the chat rooms of the early 90s when you went in and you always used to hit ASL as an age, sex, and location.
Oh, yeah, like WBS chat rooms. Yeah, the AOL chat rooms and the whole nine.
Nope. So it's going to be Buzzsaw. I don't know how old Buzzsaw is. Was he 35, 32? I don't know. 32 male San Diego. And he's going to try to pick up another NFL beat writers maybe. I'm not quite sure what he's doing over there.
We'll leave that to him. We'll let him figure that out on his own. For those who follow Mark on Twitter, very extensive coverage of all of Chris Adamski's whereabouts throughout the day on Mark Cavalli's Twitter account. So very, very exclusive photos of Chris Adamski available on Twitter.
Hey, he almost missed the plane yesterday, too. Mind you, if our plane wasn't an hour late, delayed, which he had no clue, I look up and he's like doing O.J. Simpson in the Pittsburgh airport. It's like our plane's supposed to take off at 2:30. It's 2:28, and Buzzsaw sprinting down the hallway. Little did he know we had an hour delay. He was sweating. It was kind of funny.
Please tell me he did the hurdle over like the luggage rack.
Well, no, he was sweating like a pig. I mean, I guess I should have told him it was delayed when I knew he was going to be late. But, you know, then where's all the fun in that?
Well, speaking of running backs who have used the nickname Juice, whether we like it or not. Yeah, I'm going there. Le'Veon Bell, a statistic I just read recently from Elias Sports Bureau. Le'Veon Bell has, I believe, 367 yards from scrimmage in his first two Monday Night Football games. That is the most by any player in NFL history in his first two games on Monday Night Football. My question to you, we did see quite a bit of Le'Veon Bell last week. Some fans wanted it in those critical situations, those two third down plays in the fourth quarter and overtime. We did not see Le'Veon Bell. Do you expect to see more of Le'Veon Bell in this game against San Diego?
Yeah, I mean, everything's pointing toward that. I mean, those stats were wonderful. I can't remember the Monday night games he played in, so I'll take your word for it on
one
that.
One of those would be Tennessee, wouldn't it?
Yeah, okay, the Tennessee, the 190 yards where they just kept feeding him the LeGarrette Blount exit show. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, San Diego, I mean, I think it's well known how they've struggled stopping the run at times, and that coupled with some of the big issues that he had last week, I don't see how you don't try to feed him, but they're not going to do it. I mean, they're not coming in with the game plan of let's feed Le'Veon Bell 40 carries and take our chances. They don't do that. Now, if it ends up morphing into that, I know what they do. I mean, they come into the game with 7 or 8 run plays that they like, 7 or 8 passing plays that they like that they're going to stick to regardless. Now, which one's working is which ones they'll stick to. So it's all going to be determined on what's working. I could see it morphing into that later in the game where he's a 29, 30 carry guy and you all of a sudden look up and have 150 or 160 yards. However, if it's taken away and that's not working, they're feel free to go something else. But if ever anything's set up, Josh, for him to have a big day, the juice man, it would be this day with, you know, Vic obviously only 2 weeks into this and Martavis not back and trying to just do anything to get a win. I mean, that's the biggest key out of anything. I mean, regardless of how they accomplish it, you can't go 2-3 in this division when Cincinnati's 5-0 and you got a tough couple games coming up in Arizona and at Kansas City. So it's quite imperative just to get the job done. That's the juice, man. You know what's funny about that, Josh? The only person that refers to him is Juice himself.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I don't even ever heard one person say, "Hey, Juice, what's up?" I see a lot of Instagram videos of saying, "Juice, this is Juice here."
The only other one I've heard is Mike Tomlin himself. That's it.
I guess that's an important one, right?
Tomlin made one reference to it, I think, during training camp. That was the only time. Other than that, I haven't. And you will not hear it coming from me. That's nothing against Le'Veon. It's just, I think that's the worst idea possible.
I like D'Angelo calling him the bull. Calling him the big bull or something like that. I would like that over Juice.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's already one big bull in this town, and most people expect him to be gone anyway, and Pedro Alvarez, right? I'd rather call Le'Veon Bell the big bull than I would Pedro Alvarez, let's put it that way.
But I think Pedro's going to stick around as we divert a little bit. You're not going to get anything for him, man. I mean, if you can get something for him in the off season here, feel free. But I don't think you're going to get anything of value for him.
I kind of have that feeling, too. And that's, I guess that's another conversation for another time. I feel like just in the midst of everything, he may stay longer than people expect. But speaking of people leaving and coming and going, there's been one guy who's been back with the team for almost a week now, and no one knows what's going on with him. What is going on with Martavis Bryant?
We're just not allowed to say. We'll get our left leg amputated.
All right, well, what can you tell us about Martavis Bryant, about what's been going on here with him?
I could tell you about this with Martavis Bryant. He practiced Monday. He talked to the media afterwards, and that was the infamous, you know, I'm never going to do this again thing, where he, you know, addressed the media for the first time. Tuesday was player's day off. Wednesday, he did not practice, and he confirmed as much afterwards, saying he had some soreness in the lower extremity, lower extremity between the thigh and the shin bone on the left side of the body. So after that, it was lockdown, man. It was lockdown city, baby. You're not allowed to report anything you see in practice. So anything you see in practice, you cannot report unless you get it confirmed through any player or a coach. Mike Tomlin locked it down and said nobody talk about it. Martavis wasn't in the locker room. So then we say, fine, let's wait till the practice report comes out. Because you know what? If he's injured, they got to put him on the practice report. Wait a second here. We got a little twist of the story coming up here. The little twist is, since he is not officially removed from the suspended reserve list, which they have a roster exemption until, don't ask me why, until tomorrow at 4 o'clock, which means they can activate him at any time during that period. They chose not to, which means he's not officially on the roster, which means they don't have to officially list him on the injury report. So all of a sudden, he missed Wednesday. We know he missed Wednesday. We know what happened Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We're not allowed to say, unless somebody, like I said, confirms it. Nobody would confirm it because Tomlin got to him. So we could put one and one together and get a two here of what's going to happen with Martavis Bryant. It has nothing to do with his drug rehabilitation or his suspension of him if he possibly does not play today or not activated in time today. It's all due to, I would gander to say, a tweak of his lower extremity in Wednesday. But I don't expect him to play. And I just don't know if this is gamesmanship. I don't know if this is a little quirk in the rules, but it seems like something shady here. If you're allowed to practice with the team, but just because you're not on the suspended list because you have an exemption, you don't have to list it. It seems like it goes all of these practice reports are not give anybody an unfair advantage as in the gambling realms, right? So if this guy could or could not play Friday, shouldn't he be required to be on the injury report, rather if he's on the roster or not? It's just a whole bunch of crap going on right here, right now, and I would imagine that rule might be looked at in the future here because it just doesn't seem right.
So basically, if I get questions about whether or not Martavis Bryant is going to play tonight, the best I can say is we don't know.
We know. Maybe we can't say.
That's even more frustrating for people than we don't know.
Play, put it this way. I wouldn't, if I was a guessing man and if I was a fantasy football guy, I wouldn't put him in my starting lineup.
That's a fair assessment. And it's interesting how they say it's in the leg area between the thigh and the shin bone.
That might have been just me saying that.
Oh, okay. Because I was about to say, last time I checked, they called that area the knee, but you know. That's a very interesting description.
Serious. It didn't look like there was anything serious when Wednesday when he was, before he was instructed not to talk about it anymore, whatever. I don't think it would be nice to have him back, I guess, but if it's to hinder him in future games, then why not? It seems like Mike Tomlin was being overly cautious with some of these injuries, which probably then leads us into your next question about Ryan Shazier now, wouldn't it?
It's like you knew I was going to go there. Because it was, it's going from one shady injury situation to another one. So let's jump into it. Ryan Shazier, what are we thinking here?
Man, if the guy he was practiced all week, and we can tell by that, by him being on the practice report saying he was limited or practice, but Mike Tomlin ruled him out. I think Shazier thought he was going to play, wanted to play, but it seems like it's one of those things where, when he comes back, Tomlin doesn't want any lingering type of issues. So I think they could have used him a lot this week, especially when you're going against a guy like Danny Woodhead, a guy that they can put in multiple different positions, and you're probably going to need a pretty quick linebacker to follow him around and try to watch him in space. They're going to have Timmons probably do a lot of that. But you know what? Timmons, for how good Timmons is, he's struggled at times trying to cover those type of guys. I mean, it's hard to cover 5'8", one of those speedy type of scat backs out there. So I just honestly think they're being very, very cautious with his shoulder, and I would imagine he would be back next week, but I didn't think he would be. Honestly, who thought he would miss anything after the San Francisco game? All he did was, if you look at the play, was made a hit with the shoulder on a relatively small wide receiver. It's not like anything got contorted or dislocated or shoved out of the way in that shoulder. It looked like there was some soreness and some, I won't say numbness, but some lack of mobility, and I guess they're just taking it slow. I guess if you didn't have a guy who was like Spence or Vince Williams to be able to fill in, maybe they can rush him back, but they feel that they can wait another week.
So in the midst of all of that, let me ask you this question, because Ryan Shazier is definitely out. Martavis Bryant, if you read between the lines, it probably looks like he may not play. So here's a question. Can the Steelers still win this game without these two players being a part of it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They, at one place, mean, if you read Buzzsaw Dempsey's story the other day about Steelers on the West Coast, they've struggled a lot on the West Coast. But one place they've had intermittent success is in San Diego for one reason or another. I believe it's the last place they won on the West Coast was here. So, yeah, I mean, San Diego, you have to watch. It's going to be all about Phil Rivers, and I think it's going to be a lot of these crossing underneath patterns. And that's what, if one thing the Steelers have always struggled with, and it's not an easy route to run, is some of those quick things across the middle of crossing. I mean, I think the only way the Steelers lose this game, to be honest with you, if Phil Rivers just puts up a ton against them, and he's very capable of doing something like that, because he leads the league in passing, was 1,300 yards, is averaging 300 some yards a game. He's a quality quarterback, but if you're going to sit there, and that's why I would like to think that they're going to do everything they can to try to take him away. So I don't know how you do it, rattle him, blitz him. I don't know if you can blitz him because he gets rid of the ball really quick. I'm interested to see what type of game plan Keith Butler has, because it's been quite specific to the team they played over the first 4 weeks. So I'm curious to see how he dials things up here against Rivers, because I don't think Melvin Gordon's going to beat you. I don't think even the receivers are going to beat you, even though Keenan Allen's good. Antonio Gates might be able to beat you because they struggled something mightily against tight end. But that's been ever. I mean, that's not just Keith Butler. That's Dick LeBeau, too. Past 10 years, they struggled against the tight ends, and I think they allowed the fourth most catches. So Rivers to short stuff to Gates, if you stop that, I think they'll be all right, because I think they're going to be able to score a decent amount of points tonight.
Well, here's a question, because you mentioned the receivers, you mentioned Keenan Allen, but at the same time, San Diego's offensive line, Orlando Franklin, I believe, listed as doubtful. King Dunlap may not be expected to play. DJ Fluker's battling injuries. So you got three starters on this offensive line that may not play. And then as far as wide receivers, Malcolm Floyd's been hurt. Jacoby Jones has been hurt. Stevie Johnson's been hurt. So the one place where you probably think Phillip Rivers could be helped out, he's not being helped out right now, because he pretty much has a lot of his supporters banged up. But Danny Woodhead's still in the backfield. You talked about Melvin Gordon maybe not being the guy that beat you, but Danny Woodhead's still there. We know his history going back to when he played for New England. Really good receiver out of the backfield, can run the ball when called upon, you know, in spurts, not in, you know, heavy rotation, but in limited duty. So among the weapons that are left, you mentioned Antonio Gates being back. It's his first game off suspension for performance enhancing substance use. And then there's still Adarius Green, the other tight end. So those might be the three guys I think you focus on. Woodhead, Gates, and then Ladarius Green as well.
Yeah, you know, another reason why you probably would, my goodness, there's something crazy happening here in San Diego. It's starting to rain. I thought it does not rain in San Diego. I'm seeing drops of rain being dropped in the pool here. Does it ever rain in San Diego? I thought it never rains in San Diego.
Yeah, Tony told me it never rains in Southern California.
My goodness.
They lied.
Well, there's a couple of spits, but like you said, those guys are sitting out or possibly being out. That means you're going to have a lot easier job trying to stop Keenan Allen. You can roll safeties to him, and you can high-low him or whatever you want to do with him. So with the limited options there, I mean, what you said with the offensive line all banged up, you would imagine they put pressure on them there. So I don't know if San Diego has anybody that can really stretch the field on you. Very deep, so they might try to play a lot of underneath stuff and get at him quick. Now, more and more I think about it, that could be a pretty doggone good game plan, knowing that you would have to imagine Steelers are well aware of who might or might not play against them tonight, and I'm sure that will dictate of what they can do. So, they seem limited, don't they? I mean, offensively, even though they put up 300-400 yards a game.
It sounds that way. And to your point, before we take a break here, we'll reference Ralph Paulk's story from this morning's Trib. He talked about how the Chargers like to attack defenses with their two tight ends and their wide receivers. And the one thing that he brought up was a formation with both tight ends stacked to one side with the receiver, in this case Stevie Johnson, with Keenan Allen to the other side, and pretty much using the tight ends to exploit the middle of the field. My question to you is, what would be the best way to try to neutralize that? I mean, is it to the point where they have to try to pick their poison, maybe, trying to stop one thing versus another, or is there a way that they can try to limit these tight ends in the middle of the field?
Well, first thing they have to do is probably jam them at the line of scrimmage if they can, but you can get away from that by, you know, spreading them out or putting them in a slot or putting them in motion or something like that. It's just going to have to be playing. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they do a lot of that trail technique stuff. You're going to have the safeties in the middle. It's very, very difficult to be able to stop not one but two type of tight ends. I think it's going to be interesting to see if how many times they play two tight ends in that situation where they'll be able to do that. But you're going to have to get some good play from Will Allen. You're going to have to get Mike Mitchell there. You're going to have to get Pete, which they struggled before, is have their inside linebackers have deep enough drops. I mean, where do we see that at? I think Buffalo preseason, Vince Williams didn't get deep enough. I think Timmons maybe in the game didn't get deep enough. This is going to have to be, there's inside guys maybe chipping them at the line, and the inside linebackers and the safeties working together to be able to stop them. Because, like I said, if it's one way they can get beat, and it would be letting Gates and Green get off, and that's the big number to get them.
All right, well, in the meantime, we'll take a break. We'll give you a moment to maybe let yourself take a quick dip in the pool, maybe splash Adamski a few times if you feel like it. But we'll take a break. When we come back, Mark, I'm asking you a few questions. Five or six guys I think to be keys to this game, and I'll ask you your opinions on those. And one of the guys is another player that Ralph Polk referenced in a story in this morning's Trib. We will talk about him when we come back. So all that and more on the Mark Cabali Show when we come back on Trib Live Radio.
Before every Steelers game, don't miss the Mike and Dave's Black and Gold pregame show, the best and most comprehensive Pittsburgh pregame show, taking you right up to kickoff.
We're going to be here all day, baby. I like this kind of party.
All the Steelers insiders from the Trib and exclusive Steeler player interviews, plus live reports from the stadiums, all right here on Trib Live Radio. The Mike and Dave's Black and Gold pregame show is brought to you by Mike and Dave's Italian Bread Place, Deli and Catering in Greentree, and Mike and Dave's Boardwalk Sandwich Shop in Brentwood on Sawmill Run Boulevard, right across from Getco. Go online to theitalianbreadplace.com and watch the super sub being made.
Now back to the Mark Cabali Show on Trib Live Radio.
Welcome back to the Mark Cabali Show. Josh Taylor in studio with you on Trib Live Radio. Mark Cabali, live from San Diego, enjoying himself by the pool at his hotel.
Actually, I have just migrated north up into the room because there's a little rain out there. I don't want to get wet.
It's still raining.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it rain. There's a little bit of spitting going on. It might have stopped now.
A light drizzle in San Diego. That's breaking news.
It's never heard of before.
It's kind of unbelievable. All right, well, in the midst of that, obviously we can't dwell on the weather much longer. So we will go back to tonight's game. And we talked already about Philip Rivers. We talked a little bit about San Diego's offense. We talked about injuries with Ryan Shazier. We talked about Martavis Bryant's status or lack of reportable status thereof. So we will move over to the Steeler defense. We talked a little about Le'Veon Bell and not a lot about Mike Vick, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But right now we're going to talk about the Steelers defense. Today's front page of the Trib, if you haven't seen it, has the headline Veteran Benefits and the subject of Ralph Polk's cover page story for today, Will Allen. And the topic of the article is that Will Allen's experience has helped to solidify the Steelers' secondary, being the starting strong safety in replacing Troy Polamalu and actually beating out Shamarco Thomas, who was expected to be the heir apparent to that role, but it has become Will Allen. And it looks like, Mark, if you want to call it that, looks like he's actually put a hold in this position and it's his now to keep.
Yeah, it doesn't look like Shamarco is going to take this back, barring injury. And even if injury occurs to Will Allen, I don't know if Shamarco would be the guy or not. I think it might be Robert Golden before him, which is kind of a scary proposition. I mean, a little more than a month ago, we were figuring that Shamarco was going to be your starting strong safety of the present and the future, and now all of a sudden not. I mean, it's kind of concerning knowing that
he wasn't able to step up and take this position. And knowing that Will Allen, he's a guy that, you know, Mike Tomlin's banking on right now, but 2 years ago they didn't even want him. They didn't decide to re-sign him, and he went to Dallas for a couple weeks, and lucky Dallas decided to cut him, or where would they be at right now without him? Will Allen's is very smart guy, and what you need at that position is something that Shamarco struggled with, and it's something Will Allen still has the physical capabilities as well. And it's funny how you try to get rid of the old guys in the back end of the secondary from Clark and Polamalu, and you end up going right back to it. It's a fix right now with Will Allen, but he was 32, 33. That's what age Troy Polamalu was. So it might be good right now, but doesn't look good for the future of that position when Shamarco Thomas doesn't look like he's anywhere near having the opportunity to play here.
Well, in the midst of Will Allen grasping that starting spot, he's actually had some moments. I mean, whether or not he's put together a whole game might be a bigger debate, but he's put together some pretty good moments in this season. You can think back to the New England game where he had the blitz against Tom Brady that he had the sack on, and then there was the game-sealing interception against St. Louis where he made some plays. So Will Allen has shown up in different spots this season, but my question to you would be, what have you seen about Will Allen's game that's making it work for the Steelers defense so far?
Well, what's making it work is he just knows where he's going, and he's solid tackling, solid where he should be and where he needs to be. I mean, we're looking at the positives, and he's done plenty of positives, but you know, Baltimore did run for 190 yards last week, and some of that may have to do with, well, I don't know. I'm sure some of it has to do with the linebackers and the defensive line as well. But I think where Will Allen has really made his mark was preventing some of the deep plays. I believe, three or four plays they've only had this year of 20 or 25 yards or longer, and that's nowhere near what they had last year when Troy and those guys were in there. They really, really struggled keeping the deep ball in front of them for various reasons, getting behind them. And I think two of those this year were against San Francisco when basically the game was out of reach as well. So that's what he does, too. He keeps everything in front of him. He's just a veteran, man. I mean, you want a young guys and you want guys with athletic ability, but the key is to have somebody that has some experience with some athletic ability back. My thought is, I keep harking back to the couple years ago when they decided not to re-sign him when he was free agency. Why didn't they not re-sign him then? And now all of a sudden, he's your starting strong safety and probably one of your better players on the defense. So I guess they're lucky to have him if you look at it that way, because Shamarco, he had his opportunity. I mean, they played him, if you remember, even in that final preseason game, I think, against Carolina, they played him a ton of snaps just to see if he could grasp things, and he's never able to. And you're not going to learn it by running scout team either. So unless something drastically – the only way that Will Allen loses his job now is due to injury. Right now it's his job for the rest of the season.
Well, you mentioned Shamarco Thomas and them giving him opportunities to see if he can figure things out and having to learn the playbook. And this team had, especially during the preseason, had its adjustments to make. And during the New England game in week one, that game where they looked like they had some adjustments to make as far as figuring things out in that Thursday night opener. But my question to you would be, as far as that's concerned, is when you look at Keith Butler's defense and the differences that you see between that and Dick LeBeau's defense, what have you seen in the past few weeks that suggests that maybe they are figuring things out more than they did before? And what about those differences between the two defenses and the two coordinators are working better for the Steelers now than maybe they did last season under Dick LeBeau?
I think one of the big things is Keith Butler's willing to make some modifications. It's not like, hey, this is our scheme. If we play our scheme correctly, we're going to be successful. That might have worked 10 years ago, but teams seem to be able to adjust now, and I think that's what makes the Steelers defense a little bit better now than years past. Because you look through the four games so far, and they've played different styles of defense in all four of those games. But, I mean, the most notable one was against Baltimore when you're deciding to just absolutely attack Joe Flacco because they don't want him to be able to turn his back to the line and do some play-action stuff. So they figure we attack him, attack him, attack him. We'll take a big chunk of his game playing out, which is play action pass, and that worked. And we haven't seen that in some while. I mean, you would never have seen that from Dick LeBeau. I mean, the numbers are a little skewed if you look at them because Polamalu was around the line of scrimmage so much that it almost seemed like they were rushing safeties and corners more, but nothing like last week. And I mean, we talked about the 4-3 being more prominent. We talked about cover two being more prominent. We barely have seen that yet. I'm sure one of these games, where the matchup is conducive to it, we'll see more of that stuff. So I think the biggest change is, first of all, they're playing some decent ball. That's number one. They got some athletes out there. They're allowing their two horses, and that's the first thing Keith Butler said is, we got some horses here, defensive end. Let's unleash them. He might not have said that specifically, but we got his point. And look who leads the team in sacks, and Stephon Tuitt and Cam Hayward. You talk about two irreplaceable guys right there. My goodness, what happens if one of those guys gets hurt? You have nobody. So that's a big thing, letting those guys go after it. I'm not quite sure if I agree with how they're treating the outside linebackers. I don't think it should be split up. It's not 50-50, but probably close to 60-40. I don't think that should be correct, and I don't think James Harrison should be leading the team in sacks. I mean, snaps of outside linebackers. But I think the biggest thing to ask your question is they've been able to be multiple and versatile, and you never know what they're going to do. I mean, these past couple of years, that's one thing you knew what Dick LeBeau was going to do. I mean, you knew he was going to rely on pressure from the outside guys. You knew they were going to play some off coverage, catch the pass, tackle the catch, don't let anything get behind you. You knew it was coming. Now you have to make quarterbacks and offenses think a little bit, and I think that's been the biggest difference.
Mark Caballi live in San Diego here on the Mark Caballi Show on Trib Live Radio. Steelers and Chargers tonight on Monday Night Football. Mark, we already talked about Will Allen and his impact on the defense, and a guy that I thought might have had one of the bigger impacts, and I don't think it's really that obscure of a pick, but Ross Cockrell forcing two turnovers, one fumble and an interception. I thought there could have been a third had someone gotten their hands up in that first quarter against Flacco. But Ross Cockrell shows up, was a cast off from the Bills. He was a guy that the Steelers had interest in the year he was drafted, but the Bills got to him, and the Steelers had actually brought him in for a pre-draft interview, but Buffalo lets him go. The Steelers snatch him up, and he pays quick dividends. I mean, he got himself some snaps early after he was acquired, and then that game against Baltimore, he forces two turnovers for the Steelers. What is your thoughts on Ross Cockrell been so far in the short time that he's been a Steeler?
My thoughts are, how in the world did Buffalo cut him? Better yet, is why in the world did Buffalo cut him? Not only with they cut him, they cut him in the first round of cuts, too, which is kind of head-scratching, knowing what he came here and has been able to do right now. Mind you, not only has he come in here and been able to play, he's been able to keep a guy like Brandon Boykin, who was considered by, oh my goodness, what was it, August 1st when they traded for him? Everybody mm-hmm. thought they traded for Deion Sanders when they got Brandon Boykin, and Boykin got like a dozen snaps this year because Ross Cockrell has been able to go out there. I mean, he's made the play, he had the interception, he had the fumble recovery. Now, I'll remind you, he did give up the touchdown pass as well there, so it's still a work in progress, but it makes you scratch your head. I mean, unless we're just so used to bad cornerback play here in Pittsburgh that when you actually get a little decent play from somebody you're not expecting, we all go crazy. But he's going to continue to see snaps, and it's, I mean, you have to, when you're anybody sitting there trying to criticize a guy like Kevin Colbert and his front office staff for some of the draft picks, and some of them are very, you know, you can critique them. Dree Archer, I mean, that's one. You can Landry Jones, there's another. But you got to throw the Ross Cockrells in there when you're talking about that, too. And he's been playing extremely, extremely well. And but, you know, yeah, if you really, if you play a little devil's advocate, Steelers really haven't faced too many good wide receivers or quarterback combinations. I don't think this week might be one either. I mean, I guess this week will be the best one you're going to see so far. Next week will be a little bit better. So they're thrilled. I mean, I talked to him in this two times on the Keith Butler said he first caught my eye because he jumped in there and he started playing against Antonio Brown the first day we had and he wasn't backing down. I asked him about that and he said, no, I had nothing. No, I just was out there on the scout team and I was up next. So
He finds a way to get the attention of some of the defensive coaches, but it's not by design. Yeah, smart kid, Duke. They wanted him in the fourth round. Hey, go out and get him. If they would have known he was being able to play like that, they probably wouldn't have traded for Brandon Boykin, to put it that way.
The early speculation about Boykin and him not seeing any action or seeing a lot of snaps was that the Steelers were doing it on purpose to avoid him becoming a fourth-round compensatory pick as opposed to a fifth round if he saw a certain number of snaps in that trade
from Philadelphia. It's possible. Think about it. Eventually, down the road, within the next 12 games, they're going to need Brandon Boykin. They're going to need Brandon Boykin, and snaps are going to accumulate. But to play devil's advocate, do you really think that Mike Tomlin gives a flying crap if you give up a fourth-round pick rather than a fifth-round pick if the guy can help you play? I find it hard to believe how he works that he would care about something like that.
Well, I was going to ask if the way Ross Cockrell has played and then the looks like the more trust that they're putting in him maybe helps get rid of that conspiracy theory of playing Brandon Boykin, since Cockrell really has earned a spot as opposed to Boykin earning the spot.
Yeah, at this point right now, I mean, if you're very similar in the way you guys play, or if Cockrell's a little better, might as well now. I mean, are you throwing him out there just to give him a couple of reps if you're going to lose the pick? But it needs to be, 60% of the snaps? He's played 15 through four games, average about 60 snaps of the game. It's going to be hard for him to get to a 60% level now, Brandon Boykin. So that might be a moot point from now on. But I'm not a math major, so I'm sure somebody out there has a better sort of math, whatever. You know what I'm talking about.
Mathematical.
Better formula to be able to tell me if he's able to get 60% of the snaps over the next 11, 12 games. By the way, I'm out here looking out my window. I'm looking for, you ever watch Three's Company?
Yes, I have.
That was based out of San Diego, right?
It was indeed.
Where in the world would they have? I'm looking downtown and nothing looks familiar to old Larry Gold and Mr. Furley and Mr. Roper. I'd like to go see that house.
Yeah, I can't tell you I remember much about the house. All I remember is Suzanne Summers. That's all that mattered to me.
Something tells me it might not have been filmed in San Diego. I don't know.
It's a good possibility.
I'd like to see it. This looks like a happening town here in San Diego. Everything's getting built here.
Well, if you find Suzanne Summers, call me and I'll be out there. How about that?
Yeah, she's about 70, though.
Doesn't matter.
Nah, you're right.
She's an icon. Doesn't matter. Before we let you go, Mark Cabali live in San Diego on the Cabali Show on Triple Live Radio. I wanted to ask you a couple more questions before we let you go, and here's what I wanted to do. I'm going to give you three players on offense and three players on defense, and I'll have you pick between the three which one you think could have the biggest impact on this game. And they're more obscure names. They're not the bigger names. Your Michael Vicks, your Le'Veon Bells, your Antonio Browns have been eliminated on offense, and on the same token, guys like Cam Hayward, Stephon Tuitt, and maybe a Lawrence Timmons, so to speak, Jordan Berry has been eliminated on defense and special teams. So we'll limit it to these three names on either side. We'll start with offense. Of these three players, which do you think have the biggest impact? Heath Miller, Marcus Wheaton, or D'Angelo Williams, and why?
Wow. I don't think it's going to be D'Angelo, because for D'Angelo to get in the game, Le'Veon's going to come out, and Le'Veon's not going to come out. So we'll eliminate him. I want to say Marcus Wheaton, but I'm afraid of the ankle. I know it looks like he's all right. Give me Heath Miller. You would imagine that he would have been ingrained in Mike Vick's mind over the past 11 days. That, you want to dump down some passes, throw it to Heath Miller. He's open all the time. So I would say Heath Miller after, he had one catch against the Ravens. That's kind of unacceptable. So I can see Heath put one in the end zone here. And trust me, by just walking through the streets here last night, you're going to hear a lot of Heath if that happens, because there's a heck of a lot of Steeler fans here in San Diego. So you thought, what game was it? The St. Louis game was bad. Tonight might be just as worse. As I digress a little, as in the amount of Steeler fans here in San Diego game tonight.
And Mike Vick, after last week's game, openly expressed his regret that he didn't get Heath Miller involved in the offense more. So that becomes more of a possibility as time goes along. All right, let's move on to the defense. Two guys I already mentioned are in this question, but let's put them on the other side here. Between these three players, which do you think have the biggest impact on defense? Will Allen, Ross Cockrell, or Vince Williams?
I don't think Vince Williams is going to get enough snaps to be able to be any. I'd say Will Allen again. Let's throw Will Allen out there. He's going to be tough. I think he's going to be much more closer to the line of scrimmage. I think we're going to see a lot of possibly eight men in the box or darn close to eight men in the box. Cockrell, if he happens to have a big game, my goodness, we're going to see 30. We're going to get people getting Mike Logan jerseys and type over the Logan and just put Cockrell there at the next home game if that happens. But I'll say Will Allen. I think Will Allen is a guy that will be able to. He knows what Phillip Rivers is, two crafty veterans. So the only issue there is you made it tough for me because I don't know how much Phillip Rivers is going to try to go deep and try to beat him up top over the top. So it might not be any of those, but if I had to choose between any of them, I'd say Will Allen. Unless you want me to go with Chris Boswell.
I was going to try to avoid the kicker thing because, I mean, Jordan Berry alone probably makes it an easier pick. But Chris Boswell, a lot of people, it's interesting because it's the first time we're going into a game and no one's actually referenced the kicker. Not a lot of Chris Boswell talk. Maybe we don't see a lot of him and maybe that's what people are hoping for, but not a lot of Chris Boswell talk.
Out of mind, out of sight, out of mind type of thing. See what happens if he comes up and misses a 42-yarder in the first series and see check your Twitter line after that would happen.
I would imagine the same thing.
I told Danny Smith the other day, I am good from 28 yards in on the toe ball, and he told me, get the hell out of here.
hey, at least he knows where to find you if that changes. All right, well, I said that would be the last thing. All right, one last thing before you go, because this is something I have to point out, because this is an important thing. Tonight's game, Steelers-Chargers, rounds out our pick and pork for the weekend. So far this weekend, I'm 2-2. I was a game behind Guy Junker. He actually is 1-3 for the weekend. I think he took the Chargers. I took the Steelers. So a Steelers win tonight puts me into first place in pick and pork. And it just so happens that, Mark, you happen to be in last place. But we're not going to dwell on that. I just want to get...
I'm off. I won this 2 years ago, man. I'm like, I don't even know. I'm like the Boston Red Sox, man. A couple of years ago, it was unbelievable. Now I stink.
Well, it's great because Ken Laird boasts as a two-time winner, and right now he could find himself even further back because he had an even worse week than he did before, but he also took the Steelers tonight. But to lead everything up to this, your pick for pick and pork tonight, Steelers or Chargers? Chargers 3.5-point favorites on our line for this week.
I think the Steelers might win the game, but, well, I don't know. This is a coin flip to me, man. I could see it going either way here. It's very hard to take here. You're saying the Chargers are given 3.5?
Given Chargers, 3.5. 3.5-point favorites at home.
I would have to take the Steelers plus the points on this one. Doesn't quite necessarily mean the Steelers are going to win the game. So I think it's going to come down to a last drive type of thing. I guess give me the Steelers here, something like 30-28. But I can see them losing this game as well. I mean, total 50-50. It's sort of like Garrett Cole versus Jerick Arrieta. Flip the coin. You just hope the Steelers aren't Garrett Cole.
Oh, man, I made that mistake last time. I wrote a blog post and everything, putting all my chips on Garrett Cole, and he went out and got himself rattled. So.
Yeah, you know, speaking of Buccos real quick, you want to talk about one reason why they lost, and probably the only reason why they lost? Number 45. Can't get him through 11 batters, you're not going to win many games, man.
Very true. No, no matter if it's regular season, postseason, or spring training, doesn't matter.
Nope.
All right, great stuff, Mark. Enjoy the rest of the time out there. Hopefully you don't get too hot out there. I know it's kind of warm out in San Diego, but a few hours still left to enjoy before game time, and I'm sure we'll check in with you during the Mike and Dave's pregame show. Are you going to talk to Mike Grawl all tonight?
Nobody's mentioned anything to me, so I don't know.
All right, well, hopefully if that's the case, and hopefully Mike will get a chance to bounce some things off you. But in the meantime, we'll talk to you here soon. You'll be around. You'll be around for next week's show. So we'll be back here in the studio next
week. I'll be back next week, and we'll be back forever. Right now, you know what? It's only noontime here in San Diego, which is
freaks me out with the time difference. So I'm thinking, yes, I got all day to go party. Now the game starts at 5:30 or so.
Well, maybe you get a quick nap in.
I was just hoping I don't hit any traffic here, you know?
Heading on out here. Well, good luck there in the Gaslamp District, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, see you guys. Thanks.
All right, that is Mark Cabali, live and direct from San Diego for tonight's game. Steelers and Chargers, Monday Night Football, 8:30 Eastern Standard Time, 5:30 out there on the West Coast local time. As you heard, Mark, in San Diego, it's only noon there. You know what I can do with 5.5 hours as far as like getting sleep? That makes me so jealous. Anyway, before we go, we want to get a quick interview in here as we'd like to do here in the Cabali Show. Ross Cockrell, a player we talked about earlier in the show, and Mark talked about how he has stepped in from being a first cut from Buffalo and to a possible contributor for Steelers defense. And Mark had an interview here with Ross Cockrell, so we will close out the show hearing from Ross Cockrell here on Trib Live Radio.
You get any feedback on from Thursday from fans, family after national televised game like that?
Yeah, a lot of feedback from family, friends, a lot of positive feedback, which is nice. But there's still work to do. I gave up a big touchdown in that game, so I'm just trying to focus on getting better.
Have you ever let yourself think about how much things have changed for you? Was it a tough situation in Buffalo after you got released? You didn't know where you're going and where your career might be going at that point?
Yeah, it was definitely tough. Had to keep the faith alive, though. So that's part of what put me through. I had tremendous support from my parents, from my family. And then the Steelers didn't really waste much time in contact with me, so that gave me some hope.
You were a little banged up in Buffalo at all?
Yeah, I missed some of the preseason games.
I hurt you in the long run, or did they just have pretty good
secondary? Yeah, I mean, they got a pretty good secondary up there. I don't really know what was going on upstairs, but I'm definitely happy to be here.
I know Keith Butler said when you first got here, you were going up against Antonio. It seemed like you were
good luck,
Buckos. Was it? And why would you jump in ever against him?
Really? No, it wasn't really on purpose. Yeah. I was on the scout team. I was trying to provide a good look. We were, getting ready for the Patriots, and Malcolm Butler is an up and coming corner. So I was just trying to provide the best look I could for them, and I guess I caused some attention.
Did he? How'd you fare against him with that early on when you got here?
I think I played pretty well. It was practice, and I was going 100%. And Antonio, he's a seasoned veteran, and obviously the way he practices shows what he does during the game.
Not too many people in the NFL so do. Weren't you the first corner, maybe?
I was the first. I was one of the first. Was one of the highest draft picks in a while. But this year we had a first round pick that plays for the Lions now. We had a fourth round pick plays for the Redskins. Vinny Ray, who I played with for a long time, plays linebacker for the Bengals. He actually caught the game winning pick against when they played San Diego. We got two guys that play for the Broncos.
So you're getting some
guys. Yeah, we got some guys. Quarterback that plays, that's backing up Matt Ryan in Atlanta. So we're coming along.
Now, what do you expect for yourself moving forward? Very good opportunity for you. The situation, most of the corners aren't signed through this year. So there's an opportunity here for you.
Yeah, there's definitely some opportunity here. I've just been so happy to come here and be embraced by the team and have a chance to play. Whatever happens after that, we'll see.
When you see this defense working, it looks like you guys having a decent test this week, huh?
Yeah, Rivers. It'll definitely be a test. Rivers is he's a perennial playoff quarterback. Obviously one of the best in the game, so it's being a really good test for us.
You're playing mostly nickel. You play in the slot? No, you play outside.
I play on the outside.
Are you typically, can you play slot if you need to?
If they needed me to, I would be out there. They told me when I first came in to primarily focus on playing on the outside, and so that's what I did.
They were interested in coming out of here. I think Coach Thomas said they looking at you.
Yeah.
Did you talk to him? Did you
I took a pre-draft visit here.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I thought that went very well. But Buffalo took me first.
They took him right before you, right? I think they were drafted before you. Buffalo about drafted before the Steelers.
Yeah.
Fourth, I believe.
Yeah.
They were able to get him.
Tough to be excited. It's very exciting. It's very exciting.
That interception, was that a play call, or did you see that drop off?
I can't really give that away.
It looked like Timmons was running toward.
That's, you know, that's part of our defense. We're going to try to disguise things as best we can and make plays.